Healthcare is the number one cause of bankruptcy in America. Nearly 30 million Americans do not have insurance, and those that do often find themselves facing staggering costs. Why, in the richest country in the world, does the high cost of healthcare leave millions without access? The new book, The People's Hospital, Hope and Peril in American Medicine by Dr. Ricardo Nuila, explains why, both at the macroeconomic level, as well as through the personal stories of five individuals struggling to find adequate health care. It provides an unvarnished look at health care in the U.S. and really a hopeful look at how medicine can once again protect the patient instead of the profits of insurance companies. The book is The People's Hospital, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Dr. Ricardo Nuila to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Joe. It's a pleasure to be here.
Very nice to have you on the program. You're an associate professor of medicine, medical ethics, and health policy at Baylor College of Medicine. Give us a sense of how you came to take on this book of wanting to look at what was wrong and the ways that we can fix it.
Really, it just came from my work, from interacting with people every day where I work. I work at a safety net hospital in Houston, Texas. And what that means is that it's a hospital that provides health care to patients even if they don't have insurance, even if they're underinsured. And it took me a while to realize this, but we provided health care when people couldn't get health care outside of the private system. They would be referred to us for a whole slew of reasons. And over time, it dawned on me, we're doing the work that other private hospitals won't do. And I just thought it was a compelling story. People search for health care and how could they could find it at our hospital, how that mechanism works that we could provide it. And even the question, can public health care in America be a solution to our major problems of obtaining universal health care access while cutting costs?
You use the term underinsured. That number is rising very quickly, isn't it?
Correct. It's one of the big fictions that we have in the United States that we read in articles is that when we categorize people as insured, we think that they're okay. And that is so much more complicated than that because there are so many different grades of insurance. In fact, what we're finding is that the health insurance benefits that many people have been over the years. Employers are just not wanting to pay as much for health insurance with the increasing costs of health of healthcare in America. And so what's happened is that out-of-pocket expenses for all Americans have gone up. In fact, in 2022, it went up 10%. So it is quite significant, and it impacts how people receive health care in this country and how much they're paying on a daily basis.
So when you look to address the problem, where do you start?
It's a great question. I think that you start where the money is. You said it in the intro. We're the richest country in the world, and yet not everybody has access. And one of the problems might be that we are the richest country in the world and we have a system that, you know, frankly poaches upon that. The system that we have historically is patchwork. It wasn't constructed in order to give us the greatest opportunity to achieve healthcare. It is the result of patches being placed when the market has not been able to fix the solutions. And so we do have to track the money, and we have to look at the incentives. We start with the incentives, first of all, for what President Nixon called the illogical incentive that's still operative in U.S. healthcare, which is that the more that is ordered, the more tests that are ordered, the more healthcare that is consumed, the more expensive it is, the more incentives that there are for doctors and hospitals. And that's something that is very different from the U.S., from the different parts of the world. And so that drives a lot of the healthcare costs. But it's also that, you know, we see that the profit motive is there. The intermediaries, the middlemen of insurance companies, have to make a profit in order to allow us to access the healthcare. So there's multiple rungs of profit there and baked into the system. What I found in the work I have in the hospital system where I work in Houston, Texas, is that it's direct services provided to patients, meaning that the public, the county hospital funded through property tax, is able to provide services directly without a profit motive and without an intermediary seeking profit, and that has reduced costs immensely.
When you look at, as you do in the book, the rise of employer subsidized healthcare, talk about the limitations and the challenges that those insurance holders have.
Well, it's one of the things that I see on a daily basis is that the market, the job market can have stability. Personal people's lives can be stable with that job market. And we peg health insurance to employment as we started to do in during World War II, and it grew from there. What happens is that we're presuming people's lives are completely stable. And that may have been more of the case at the time of the 1940s coming back from World War II and the baby booming. But that is certainly not the case that we've seen since COVID. The job markets change. People's job identities change. They can do remote work. So employers are also finding that healthcare is much more expensive for them to afford as a benefit for their workers. And so they're cutting those benefits. They're offering a slew of different possibilities. And a lot of the employees are selecting lesser benefits, pay less, not knowing some of those benefits are really important to have the type of healthcare that they want. It's the world has changed a bit, and it's difficult to maintain healthcare pegged to somebody's work.
Dr. Ricardo Nuila is our guest. The name of the new book is The People's Hospital. The book is published by Scribner. As I mentioned in the introduction, you provide first-person perspectives of uninsured or underinsured patients. Talk to us a little bit about, while we can't get to all of the people that you look at in the book, there's some really fascinating stories here. You tell the story of Christian, who's a young college student and retail worker, and is just trying to get a diagnosis, let's put treatment aside for a moment, for his knee pain. So what does he do?
Right. He seeks professional counsel doctors throughout the city who ping-pong him back and forth. He can't find an answer. And so he does something that a lot more people are doing, frankly, people that I know personally. He goes to Mexico for his health care. And in Mexico, he finds that the doctors here had been focusing on something else and had not discovered a kidney illness. The doctors in Mexico think that this kidney illness is chronic and that it's very difficult for them to treat here. Christian also is in such a desperate situation with knee pains. It's hard to call them knee pains because they're excruciating, and they end up being a part of a mysterious rare illness that is discovered later. But he throws a Hail Mary basically in Mexico and visits a stem cell clinic, which I discuss in the book and what that means. It's not until he arrives back in his hometown of Houston, where he does the unimaginable for so many people in his socioeconomic class. So many people who are middle class who can't even fathom going to a public hospital because they imagine that the healthcare must be bad, but he decides this is his last shot. He comes and his care is organized. He started on a dialysis treatment called peritoneal dialysis, which cut costs and allows him to have more control over his own body and his own treatments. And he's able to see a geneticist for his rare illness. And he gets his healthcare is organized. And so that one of the stories that I thought was compelling enough that I witnessed myself that I thought Americans should know about, because we have so many presumptions about healthcare, how it goes. I mean, I, as a person who has worked in healthcare, just had to investigate and think about these things. We can get in our own tunnels. And so I just thought it was a compelling story to bring to light.
When you look at stories like this and the other people that you talk about in the book, you really get a sense of how individualized the problems are, right? I mean, it really is, yeah. There's no, which gives you an indication that there's no one-size-fits-all solution.
Correct. I agree with that. I think that, in part, the way that healthcare is administered in this country puts us as individuals on a market to try to find healthcare ourselves. If you compare that to other national systems where there's a blanket insurance or there's services provided for everybody, you know, there's strength numbers, and that's just not the case in American healthcare. Everybody is an individual fending for them as they are. It's what's true of American healthcare is that you're a consumer in American healthcare, and so the market treats you as such. And I think that's it, hides the sense of loneliness and stuff that nobody really, I mean, I think everybody feels that when you call an insurance company to dispute a claim, you have a very specific policy number. It happens that people.network or the hospital might be network, all these different rungs that really clearly demonstrate that we're by ourselves and we're individuals. And that's kind of how healthcare has happened in the United States, market driven.
Where does your optimism lie?
My optimism lies in the attitudes of the people I work with, the sense that medicine is changing in many ways right now. It's to focus more on how to communicate with people, how to sit with them and listen to their problems. And so, for instance, direct the program that integrate the arts and humanities back to medicine, where we teach communication skills, listening, empathy, thinking about tolerance, tolerating ambiguity so that decisions can be made in a gray world rather than a black and white world. Those are things that the governing bodies are taking things like Dr. Burnout seriously. I also take a lot of hope in the system that I work in, and I literally just wouldn't work in a different healthcare system than the public healthcare system in Houston, because I don't have to think about billing. I can focus on medicine. And so I take hope in that, because I can go and work on, and I can do what the basic of medicine, which is sit with people, think about their problem, scientific through whatever that a doctor can give a patient. And I can feel the gratitude of that patient toward me, because this has come second. And I hope that the more that we are desperately seeing something new, the more that these different kinds of healthcare, like the one that I'm a part of, will become more a part of the American consciousness.
The name of the book is The People's Hospital, Hope and Peril in American Medicine. Dr. Ricardo Nuila is our guest. Thank you very much for sharing with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Joe, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Be well. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The People's Hospital. It's published by Scribner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.